Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody, you're listening to the Work For It podcast on the Makery Network. I'm Brian House.
And I'm Ben Butler, and together we represent the two most important components of the maker world.
I work the steel.
And I work the wood.
The show's primary focus is business in the workshop, and then we reach out to you on social media with a question every week.
We read your answers and then discuss them on the show.
Follow our show on any major podcast platform and on Instagram at workforit.podcast, or you can support us for as little as $1 a month on patreon.com/workforit. Let's get on with the show. Let's do it. You're listening to the Work For It podcast. I am Brian House. And it's Thursday, Thirsty Thursday, and I'm joined in the studio by Benjamin Butler and Brian Cohn of B. Cohn Knives. Say what's up, gentlemen.
Hey, hey, how's it going?
What's going on? What's the good
word? I'm
going
to jump right in here. I'm going to jump right in. And wait and watch, Ben, because this is what's going to happen here. We are going to discuss lots of different topics, but first and foremost on the list of things to talk about is we appreciate everybody who supports the channel through Patreon and also supports the other work that we do on all of our other social media accounts. I do need to call Brian Cohn out on something. First and foremost, Brian, number one, you stole my name, then you spelled it wrong, and then number two, you copied my shop tour on TikTok and then crushed
it. Listen, man, I thought I was trying to just add to the conversation. I wasn't copying nothing. I was taking inspiration from the great Brian House.
That was cool.
Let me tell you something. I thought it was funny because, yeah, your shop is a lot smaller than mine, so it was kind of like comedic. But I did really appreciate the you highlighting and showing and labeling, you know, a couple of the things that you have going on in your workshop. Cause it was, I'm like, damn, that's a good idea. I should have done that. But
yeah, it's something you can do on TikTok when you create a little video like that. You can put those little voiceovers.
So I gotta say, I go off 1 week to get my asshole inspected. And now you guys are TikTok bangers.
Hey,
making tweeny videos.
I don't know if you saw, but I'm about ready to pull off some twerking and some other things.
I saw.
Yeah.
Because of the course.
There's a whole bunch of really embarrassing content coming straight to TikTok, right, from
nice.
Mr. House.
When That's you're, right. You know, when you're part of the Work For It podcast and everybody else moves to a new platform, well, of course, you've got to take the leap too, so.
You miss one week. You go to the proctologist 1 week, and then everything goes to shit. You like come back, and we're like, my hair is blue.
Shave your ass for one visit.
That's
the whole world falls apart. But on that note, if I may take a minute, phenomenal episode. I listened back to the episode from last week that you guys put on. Incredible. And some topics that... Man, I think we've got to loop around to at some point.
I have a theory about why the show was so good.
Why is that?
What's that?
Because Ben was not on it.
Hey, now.
Oh,
poor Ben.
First, Ben has
to have his asshole checked, and now we're starting to rag on him. What's going on?
All right.
I'm curious. Did you get any messages from anybody that asked about your butthole? I'm just curious. Good. At least you got one.
Mission accomplished. So nice. I appreciate the concern for my ass. It is dragging most days, but
I was really on the fence about, like, actually going into a big long diatribe.
When you started, I was like, he's really hesitating.
I was hesitant because I'm thinking to myself, like, wait, people are gonna believe what I'm saying. I have this ability to like tell a ridiculous story that could not be true, and people will go, really? Really? Did that happen? Is he okay? Is Ben's butthole okay? I'm like, I don't know, dude. He went and saw the proctologist. It's like fully prolapsed. We don't know what's going on. Awful. It's awful for him.
Oh, but poor Ben.
I just pulled up my notes because I had a couple of moments of like, you know, it's kind of honestly it's really unique and somewhat surreal to listen to the show when you're not on it, when you're kind of used to being on it, you know?
Right.
And especially in this case where there was two people doing the show. So really cool perspective, honestly. It was kind of nice in a way, you know, it's like reminded me of what I really truly enjoyed about the show. And so if it's any consolation, you know, a dozen or so episodes in now, I still like the show, so that's good. But
I would hope so.
But Brian, one thing that really resonated with me was your discussion about not listening to the news. I'm like the same. I've been the same way, I think, almost literally since the last president was elected. You know, just kind of
people ask me all the time about current events, and I'm just like, I have no idea. Don't ask me.
I don't either. I came back, you know, I filled up my timesheet on yesterday, Monday or Monday, whatever, a couple of days ago. And I'm like, oh, we get June 19th off now? Like, that's a federal holiday now? Huh.
Yeah, right.
Interesting.
Yeah. I just learned about this also, which I think is really cool. You know,
it's great.
I'm an entrepreneur, so I don't get any days off, but, you know, I think it's. It's an interesting thing that we've got going on. Look, if you want to listen and watch the news, and I'm totally for all of that. It's like stay up on current events. I get it filtered through my wife.
Right,
she loves the news. She's got a iPad with like CNN and Fox News, and so she keeps up with everything.
Yeah,
and I found though that I'm a much better person. Sorry, my air conditioner is making a bunch of weird noises. Mm-hmm. I'm a much better person when I don't pay attention to the news because I have, when I worked for Fox Television, there was this, I started to learn that the news, your attention is a commodity, right? So if you're a human being, your eyes, your ears, everything is a commodity. The news organizations now, they used to be, you know, it used to be like Dan Rather and all these people, you know, making, hold on, give me one sec. Something happened to my air conditioner. I don't know if you guys can hear this. But it sounds like there's like a chicken caught in my air conditioner.
Yeah,
I'll be right back.
Yeah, it used to be. Oh, like, sorry. Go ahead, bud.
I was just going to say, it was a little more long form content. Right? Like, do you get that impression, Brian? That it's
I think the biggest thing is it used to be everyone listened to the same news and took their own opinions away from it, where now everyone reads and watches their own news and there's no, you know, overlap.
That and the opinions baked in, right?
Right. Right.
I a cousin of mine is very much into politics, very much into, you know, all that surrounding politics, loves to debate, loves to discuss and get really deep, you know, several bottles of wine in and he's still going. But one of the things he pointed out to me one time, you know, because we say, well, the news cycle right today is has been just sped up so much, right? Like the explosion of news. And he said, well, you know, he's like, think about when the telegraph was invented. He said, the exact same thing happened then. Think about when newspapers became big. The exact same thing happened then, right? It's not necessarily a new phenomenon. And I think it's really easy for us to forget that that's the case, right? And it's easy
for sure.
blame it on tech and blame it on social media and blame it on all these things. But the reality is that shit's been happening for years and years and years and years and years.
Yeah. I like Jeff Fader's take on it, where he says, "You don't care about my political beliefs. I don't care about yours. I don't. Yeah. I don't want to know."
Right. Yeah. But it's it does get pretty gray, and I think it's it gets to be a gray thing. The other thing, and this is a topic I'd like to actually dive into sometime, is the hard work versus the right work at the right time. And I think what resonated with me is that there is either something that happens when you take the jump and commit to being an entrepreneur, or it's just something that entrepreneurial people have. But I think folks like both of you have the ability to stay focused on the things that need to be done, right? Whereas if I go into the shop as a hobbyist, you know, woodworker, who hasn't fully committed to making an entrepreneurial jump, right? I'm not dependent on the work that I do in my shop to produce money. It's just either to produce enjoyment in the form of some side money or just enjoyment in the form of doing a hobby. I so easily get distracted, right? And so I could walk in knowing that I've got a commission that I need to work on, but these three other things look fun today, so I'll just go do that, right? And that's okay, because the way that things are often set up when it's a side hustle type thing that you're just comfortable leaving it status quo, which I think a lot of people end up being that way, but if you're just kind of comfortable just letting it ride, you don't often force yourself to do the right work at the right time, right? So now, you're doing hard work, but you're doing the wrong hard work to grow fast, big, strong, you know?
So here's what I did. So I found myself in the same predicament where, you know, I had orders that I needed to get done, but I also had side projects that I'm, you know, learning on. Like a little while ago, I was doing that serrated knife for the first time. Yeah. Well, what I've forced myself to do is, you know, in the morning, I make a mental list, or sometimes I even write it out of, okay, what is everything I absolutely need to get done in the shop today? Once I go through all of those things, any time past then is my playtime, is what I call it, where, you know, I can do, you know, I can fire up the forge and, you know, bang out some steel that I want to try, or, you know, I want to try this new grind, or I want to try this, that, or the other. After I get done my, you know, absolute necessities, that's when I get to, you know, do the fun things.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I think it's tricky too, like being that hobbyist, where shop time is one of about five things that all compete for time management, you know. It's hard sometimes because if I'm not head down focused on doing the right work at the right time, you know, I do a bunch of hard work on something else and then I'm just flat out of shop time. You know, it's like, well, I gotta go now. Or, you know, now it's like 100 degrees in the shop and you're going, oh shit, now I got to do the stuff I didn't want to do to begin with. And it's hotter than the hubs of hell, you know, or something like that. So, but I think some of it might be, I'm not convinced it's not a trait that entrepreneurial people just have as well, you know?
Ben, there's like a sense of urgency, I think.
Yeah.
You know, right? For me, I just know that the harder I work, the more money I tend to make. And, you know, for me, it's like not really a race to the finish line. There isn't a finish line.
Yep.
But like Brian said about, you know, being able to have that playtime, you know, for me with the grinder project, that's my income. So my orders always come first, you know, like I have to get my orders out. And then when I think I've caught up, you know, with everything, I'll get a few more and then I have to go back to it. But there's some lulls in orders, you know, there's sales get slow and you just, you know. And then that's when you see me producing knives and you see all my content about knives. And then that what I really like about that is that it actually gives me time to solve more problems. And if I can solve more problems for myself, I can probably solve them for a lot of other people, make some good content wrapped around all of that, and then continue moving forward. That's the beauty of this kind of, I wouldn't call what I do a gig economy, but it's kind of like working for myself. It's these gigs that I get and I kind of create for myself. And then that, but that urgency in me was never there when I worked for someone else. Like I could like stroll into my regular job and just know that I'm going to get a paycheck regardless of what I do. Mm-hmm. And I think that that was a big source of contention inside of me, because I felt like I had potential to do better things with my time. Yep. And I simply was not doing them. And I was just, you know, going to work.
I've said that so often lately, is that I am so hungry to work a job where I know the harder I work, the better the results will be, you know, for me, for, you know, if it's me that I'm working for, then it'd be for the company that I create, you know, in general. There are some employment systems where there is a very clear career ladder that you can climb through hard work, I think, but so many of them have been flattened to the point that that's not a possibility anymore, right? Like the harder Brian Cohn you stock shelves, it's not like the more fucking shelves you get to stock, you know, or the more money you make, or, you know, I think that was another sort of take home, was like this, our current economy and our current sort of structure for work and career ladder climbing is broken to some degree. And
absolutely it is.
So that's where, you know, like, is it, you know, the question that Brian came out with last episode was like, harder work does not lead to a better life or whatever. And it's like, well, has that ethic just been beat out of people because there's no more career ladders? You know, it's interesting.
I mean, I've been at Target for just under 6 years and I haven't climbed the ladder at all. So, and also, you know, it's especially right now, I'm coming up to my last month working for Target before I move, and or at least specifically this Target, where before, you know, I would, you know, bust my butt, you know, it's constantly where you have 4 hours of work, but you have like 8 hours of work to get done. Mm-hmm. So I would bust my butt to try to get everything done now. And now it's like, okay, well, I'm going to do my 4 hours worth of work with the 4 hours you give me.
Yeah.
And
that's what happens, right? No, you're not. I mean, you're probably performing at an appropriate level more so now, being mindful of it, than you were when you were busting your ass to get more done, you know, because it's a hard comparison to make, right? But you were working too hard for your money at some level, right?
I think it goes to, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah. What I was going to say is hard work and efficiency is not rewarded in corporate America. It's actually sort of a downgrade, because then they just give you more work and they don't compensate you any differently for it. And, you know, being an employer, I compensate my people based on performance, you know. So if at the end of the year, I noticed that they did an extra awesome job, they all get bonuses, or, you know, and some guys don't get them. And I'm just like, well, maybe that's a message to you that you should, you know, do a little bit more, work a little harder, whatever it might be. And it kind of, you know, it can create sort of some contempt, you know, between myself and the other employees or whatever. But, you know, if I see you performing, doing better and always improving, then you're going to rise up. I mean, that's just the way I am. You're making me more money, so you're going to make more money. And I want to keep you. I want you to know that you're important to my organization. Whereas in corporate America, your hard work most of the time goes unnoticed, you know, or if it is noticed, they're like, oh, hey, you're really super efficient at that. That's great. Here's like 10 more tasks.
Exactly. And you're totally right. We call it walk-in work. You know,
because you know why? Because they don't care about you. You could literally be replaced the following day and it won't matter. This is my argument for being an entrepreneur, because I will tell this. This is how I put it to people, because when I quit my job, my wife was pregnant and we had Dexter. He was real little. Like he was really little. And everybody in my family was like, "You're effing crazy. Do not quit. You are the only income that family has. You're going to, you're going to really regret this." And there were times that I regretted it, you know, or I wish I had a regular income. However, this is my argument for it. And this is how I responded to those things, was that if I'm an entrepreneur and I have multiple clients, which I do, I have thousands of clients, I have to make, you know, most of them happy, right? For the most part. Now, if one of those clients does not gel with me and it's a problem and they decide to not work with me anymore, I have 999 other clients to work with.
Yeah.
Whereas before, with my job, I had one guy that I had to make happy. And if I didn't make him happy, then he could control every single thing in my life, from my time to my money to how I am supported financially, how my workflow goes. Every single minute of my workday was controlled by this person. And, you know, I'm not always the best socially, you know, and I just say it like it is. I'll sit in a boardroom full of people who should be smarter than me and say they're all fucking stupid, you know, like you're doing it wrong. And maybe I need to change my tact. But at the same time, people get really shitty about that and they want to make your life miserable. They're tuned into office dramatics and politics and everything else. And I just hated that. Like, can't we just get the job done? Can't we come to work and just work together for a common goal and then go home? And you really can't. So my argument is, you got one guy to make happy. And if the law of, you know, diversification plays any role in this, then it's much better to be an entrepreneur. Now, statistically, most businesses fail within the first year, and most other businesses, the rest of them that do succeed through the year, they fail within 5 years. Now, if you can beat that 5-year mark, then you're doing something and you've got you've got this momentum. So
it is interesting. It is what it is. Yeah. The 8-hour workday is an analogy I've used at times. You know, this was based on a certain performance metric in a manufacturing economy, probably, you know, to some extent. It used to be longer. It used to be, what was it, 9 or 10 hour day was sort of the standard. But it's based on the fact that, you know, essentially that Bob can make X number of widgets in X number of hours, and therefore everyone shall work X number of hours, right? And I think what is the reality in most cases, Brian, you alluded to the gig economy kind of thing. But in most cases, jobs are projects, right? Whether the project takes you 5 minutes or the project takes you 5 days or 5 months, I would say most work can be broken down to look at it on a project basis. And in reality, how much you get done in 1 8-hour day, pick a random 8-hour day, may or may not have much bearing on how long it takes to get the whole project done, right? So some days you're going to get shitloads of work done. And that's because that particular day at that particular point in the project, it was serendipitous to get a lot of work done. And all the stars aligned and you banged it out and everything was good. But I think there are also those days where you spend 8 hours thinking about what needs to be done. And that's what needs to be done that day. You know, so I've often argued, like, employees shouldn't be paid per hour. They should be paid per project. But then the problem is accentuated. You know, the problem that Brian just described is massively accentuated because it's literally up to your one and only supervisor to deem whether or not you were successful, you know, in completing the project, quote, on time, whatever on time is. And it's a
logistical nightmare, too.
Yeah, I mean,
when I talk, I have 3 employees and they're salaried, you know, and it's because I don't want to have to figure out every single hour they worked and the all of the calculation that goes along with that. It's just like, here, you get 24 paychecks a year, and they're all going to be the same. And if you do overtime, let me know, and we'll add that in. You know, we can do that pretty easily. And I do that because I try to automate all processes as far as owning a business. It's like, especially two businesses, what are your processes every single day, and what can you automate, and automate the living shit out of every single process you can, because it takes that focus away from your true endeavor, which is, you know, growth, you know, making more product or whatever. So, you know, if you look at it in terms, and by the way, people are terrible with money. So like, if you can tell somebody like, hey, I'm going to divvy out, you know, you get $2,000 twice a month, and here you go. Here's your money. They know that they're going to get that money every single on the 15th and the 30th. They're going to get that check. And that helps them over the course of time to budget somewhat.
Yeah.
I just think if we tried to do it on a per project basis, you might as well be an entrepreneur then. You might as well, might as well be just a contractor or whatever.
I think it's just another form of argument in favor of entrepreneurialism, you know, and I think, I guess, point of the matter, when you step back and look at how complex, call it corporate America, you know, I see the same thing in a federal civilian service job. But when you look at how convoluted the career ladder has gotten and the workplace has gotten, and how truly difficult it is to equate hard work to more dollars or more positive net benefit for the employee, it's no wonder people start to go, no, hard work doesn't equal a better life. Hard work equals more work, you know?
Yeah. You're right. You're right. I think I was trying to stir the bucket by posting that and
obviously I bring up a dialogue.
Yeah. The dialogue was, you know, I had both sides of the argument, and you know, in my opinion, I think that you can measure hard work as a metric as an entrepreneur and say you have a better life. That's been my experience, but it's been my experience only in the last, say, 5 years of my journey. The first 10 years were working my fingers to the bone in hopes that that would equate or exchange into a better life. I just personally dislike authority. I've always had an issue with it, and I can't, I'm unemployable. You can't, no matter how much money someone were to offer me to come work for them, I would say, oh, I have to be there when? I have to do, wait, what now? I have to dress like how? Oh, okay. Yeah, no, fuck you. I'm not doing it. And I just simply won't do it. That's who I am.
And I think
Once you've had the freedom of being an entrepreneur, it's definitely hard to go back. And especially like in my situation. Right? Yeah. In my situation, you know, where I'm, you know, doing one foot in each of them, you know, being in my own shop feels like absolute freedom. And then, you know, being at Target where you have to dress in a uniform and do things at a certain time and, you know, at a certain rate, it's just like... It's so hard to go to the Target job and be happy there when your happiness is sitting at home in the shop. So
that just motivates you even more, right? So you want to
absolutely.
Yeah. That was my argument. Was you get shit on when you're doing these other jobs, and it's designed that way. Maybe not in their minds, but it's designed in a way to push you out of the nest, to make you better so that you don't want to. And some people are just like, I don't care. Like some people, I kind of admire that, by the way. Like I see these people who can go to a job, work as a cash register or in retail or whatever, and they're 100% content with it. I'm a little bit jealous of that because I'm like, God, life would be so much easier if I just like could just play ball and, you know, go to work and whatever, but I'm not going to do it. Anyway. All right. Let's switch gears real quick. And we're glad you're back. We're glad you're joining us again, on the podcast. It was good to be sort of change it up just to have a good conversation with Brian because, you know, people got a chance to get to know him more because, you know, 100%. It's just me and him talking. But it's good to have both of you back in the studio. Now, let's switch it up a little bit and talk about the Work For It Projects hashtag that we created. There's been some activity on Instagram. Yeah. So what we've done is this is a concept that Brian came up with, where if you tag WFI, that's Whiskey Foxtrot India Project, that you'll get in a list of projects that are being done, sort of inspired by what we're talking about on the podcast. And this month, people are making things for their kitchen, and we've actually got about four people involved in this now. So did you guys look at the projects mm-hmm. that are on those?
Yeah,
hashtags?
So if you want me to take over, I'm going to take the MMT maker. This is Vincent. Nice. He looks like he is, you know, about midway into his learning of the knife making career or hobby, or however. I guess I don't know if he's full time or not or whatever. But so he is making his very first forged integral paring knife for his kitchen. So kind of a cool little project he's got going on there. Yeah. So he's got a picture up. It looks like a pretty decent sized paring knife sitting on his forge. It's either a really large paring knife or a very small anvil. But right. I contacted him. He said that he was using 01 tool steel. It's his first time doing a fully integral knife. So kind of a cool, you know, really nice for him to, you know, post up on the hashtag WFI project. But yeah, go and check him out at MMTmaker on Instagram.
And he has a website too called mmtmakemethis.com. And if you go there, you can see what a creative person Vincent is. He even has cocktail recipes on his website. So I found that pretty interesting. Cool. But he says, not only do we love working with wood and metal, we also like working with cooking and drinks. Here are a few of our recipes from our favorite drinks and some of the best ribs you will ever have. So he's got like different recipes on there. I love that kind of thing, because I feel like there's not enough of us Renaissance folks out there. So go find MMT Maker. And also, if you just search for WFI Project on Instagram, you'll see a list of all the different pictures that are up there. I'm going to take the next one. Bent Llama, my man, Nate Walpole. He is making a Nakiri, which is, he says here, two small 14-millimeter Nakiris in progress. He's going to do an S-grind single bevel, which is difficult, and stabilized, I don't know how to say that. It's Thua
burl. I've never heard of that wood, so.
Never heard of it either?
No.
Copper and 1084. And you can see in his photos, I think he's rocking the TR Maker small wheel attachment, which is cool, and he's doing some really complicated.
You can tell
grinds.
It's the TR Maker one because you can see the TR in the in
oh
his
yeah
logo
the upper
the
left
back. Yeah
yeah yeah yeah in the upper left there. So check out Bent Llama. It's just how it's spelled, Bent Llama, and Llama is with two L's, by the way, for all y'all who don't know that. And his name is Nate, and you can find him on everywhere, Facebook. The guy's got an awesome story, so. Nice. Go find him, read about him, and check out his stuff.
Nice. It's actually, so I just looked it up. It's the Tuya tree. And it's,
if there's anyone who's going to know what that wood is, it would be Ben.
Hey, I work the wood, man.
How does the Tuya tree burn, Ben? Is it a slow burn?
Apparently
it
burns like a bush because it's a biblical tree.
It's a burning bush.
It's a conifer.
I had that once in college. It was awful.
Right? Gives you a hell of a headache. It's a conifer from the cedar family, and it's exclusively native to Morocco.
Ooh. So it probably has a, it doesn't look this way, but it probably has kind of like an olive wood.
Yeah.
Look
it's,
to
it's
it.
It's kind of reddish, but olive wood and spalty. Yeah. And the oils are used in religious ceremonies. So when they... when they cut off your pecker, they'll put some of this oil on it. I am shouting out the Shoe Shed. The Shoe Shed made a teaspoon. And this was a couple, 3 days ago, I guess. And it says, finished off the teaspoon this morning up to 800 grit. I'm still not very I'm still not very good. More confident about stock removal and getting more accurate with the axe, though. So
hold up. He teaspoon carved with that an axe. With an axe?
Apparently, holy at cow. Some stage of the game, yeah. And he hashtags whoa. Bushcraft, spoon making, and handmade. I can't quite tell from the picture how big this thing is, but he says teaspoon, and it does not look very large. But the shoe shed, no. It is the underscore shoe underscore shed. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things that I've always wanted to try to do is make a wooden spoon. Have you ever done that, Ben?
I have. It's super fun. There's a multitude of ways to do it, right? Very traditional carving with a knife. There's a couple different knives. A hook knife that's sort of a round. It's really round almost. And the blades, you know, the blades really curved. And that's typically done with green wood, where you know you literally go cut a tree and start shaping it immediately, but with that process you'll usually only get it to a rough shape or size and then maybe let it cure for as much as a year, and then wow. provided nothing cracks or anything else, you would finish it off with more refined carving. All that I've done has been with dried wood to start, you know, kiln dried wood or wood that I know is already stable, and done some power carving. Power carving is really fun to make spoons quickly.
I was just going to bring up the fact that it would be really cool to see you make a wooden spoon with the ShopBot.
Yes.
Ooh. Right. I mean, that would be super rad, right? You could do like patternings crank in the handle and stuff and mix epoxies in with it. That would be really neat.
I was playing around with a bunch of CNC projects this morning, but I've got three individual sort of bowls, but they'll be like catch-all trays that are kind of shaped really cool, so they all fit together in a bunch of different ways. But yeah, carving bowls and spoons and that kind of stuff on the ShopBot's really pretty sweet.
ShopBot carving, I saw one of your posts. Your son, did he hit a home run or was just given the game ball? That was a cool little project making a stand for it.
Yeah, he got the game ball. And it's honestly, I'll be completely honest, it's been a little while. It's been a month and a half or so since that all happened. But
sure.
I think it was, they had a game where he had a solid base hit and just, you know, kind of all round pretty good game for him especially. And the coach had started the tradition at the beginning of the season that he gave a game ball to every, you know, to one player after every game. And it's the first, I think, sport coach that we've come across that I was really like, this guy's got it figured out, right? Like, I've coached a number of teams, and one of the most challenging things I think is turning a group of 9, 10, 11 year olds who are complete strangers before they walk into the room, turning them into a team, right? That has camaraderie and, you know, is genuinely cheering each other on and, you know, having teamwork and all those kinds of things. And this guy was able to pull it off. Now, he's a smoke jumper by day, so it didn't surprise me too much because they're sort of elite humans anyway. Yeah. It's kind of cool. So and then it was neat because that was the first time that I actually played around in three dimensions on the ShopBot, right? At some level, a CNC machine is just a really accurate cookie cutter machine, you know, or an accurate jigsaw. But to actually do carving where you have some third dimension where you're carving out a little cup or a bowl or something like that, it's a whole different process in the VCarve software. So it was really cool. And then that's led me to doing, I'm actually I'm setting up for a carve tonight that will run for, I want to say it was almost 3 hours, and it's a really sweet pat. It's the ultimate final iteration of the B-cone BBC knife. Yeah.
You're finally
cutting
around
that thing.
Wasn't the first one like it? Something happened to it, and
yeah.
You poured the epoxy, and it kind of like bled into some
of
the
other. Yeah, it just didn't have enough pizzazz. You know, it probably would have worked all right. But then I also realized that when I carved the last one, I carved a really cool pattern just in a flat piece of walnut, and then poured epoxy into that pattern. So it created a negative space that was an arrangement of a pattern.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And then just poured the epoxy onto it. Well, I only carved that negative space down maybe 0.2 inches. And so by the time I would have got to sanding on that thing and everything else, I would have sanded the damn pattern right off, you know?
Yeah.
So I got to go deeper. And I think this time I think I've got it figured out to where I can actually carve very close to the final handle shape on the shop bot as well. So my goal was to get it to the point where I pick it up off the shop bot, put some epoxy on the knife, put the pins in, and you're almost done at that point. So
that's awesome. Cool. Well, we're looking forward to seeing that. Now, are you sharing any of that process anywhere publicly, or are you guys kind of like keeping the collaboration just
by design just out of circumstance, but that's hopefully going to change here in at least the next handful of weeks, because I'm home alone.
That's right. Yeah. You're like Kevin from that movie.
Yeah.
You're Macaulay Culkin.
I got nothing but time and tripods.
Well, speaking of epoxy and projects, I thought I'd bring up what I've got going on in my workshop. I am, real quick, I'll go backwards real fast. The Giotto challenge, the knife challenge that I did with all of the fantastic YouTubers that I was a part of. I did actually get in fourth place, believe it or not,
I saw that. I was really impressed on you getting so high. Good for you, Brian. That's awesome.
Know. I was too. I'm like, damn, man. Like, these guys have all this, you know, I was using mono steel, you know, so I was up against some guys using some pretty amazing forging techniques and Damascus and everything else.
You got community, you know.
I think that's partially it, and also that I really did follow like what a traditional Giotto looked like. So I think that was partially some of the other knives that were in that challenge, they were a little outside of what a traditional K-tip Giotto looked like, and I did a very traditional Giotto. So I appreciate everybody who voted for me. So thank you so much. But getting back, that was the last video that I posted, and I posted that right around the first of the month, I think, that video came out, and I haven't made another YouTube video since. And I'm actually in the process of making a video that'll come out this weekend. I am working on prototyping a handle for the Revolution Grinder, and it's something I've wanted to do for a long time. I just couldn't like get it right. I've made like probably 10 or 20 different iterations of this handle. And I realized like, if I don't just settle on a look and feel, I'll never, you know, it'll never get done. So
this is for up on top, like the, where the, okay. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, it mounts to the tracking arm where the tracking wheel is, so that you can pull belts on and off and tighten belts and change swap belts basically. So I had a sort of a moment of clarity. I realized that, you know, if I use plate steel and some sort of like maybe 1x1 stock steel, I could create kind of like an insert where it would slide into the tube steel, and then it would be a very simple, you know, handle to make, you know, and I'll obviously offer the parts, you know, for sale or whatever people want to buy them. But then I also had this thought, like, well, what if I put holes in it, like pinholes on a knife handle? And then
People can make their own handle.
Make their own handle, right. Because, you know, a lot of us are knife makers already, and we're making a lot of handles anyway, so we'd probably have handle material laying around. So I am in the process of creating my own custom handle, and I'm working with some different materials that I've never worked with before. So you'll see the video. It'll come out this Saturday on YouTube. And hopefully, if everything goes well, I'm actually pouring Alumalite epoxy, and I'm mixing colors, and I'm also mixing like those powders, the real shiny. Mm-hmm. I'm doing some the illuminescence, I don't know, powder. Mm-hmm. It's called Black Diamond. I don't remember the name of whatever it's called.
Yep.
But Black Diamond pigments. And then I mix the liquid Alumalite dye in. And then on top of that, Ucel from TR Maker sent me a whole bunch of that aluminum honeycomb. So I'm making that, you know, kind of cool look with the aluminum honeycomb and like the different mixes of the
that
epoxy
thing is going to look wild when you're done. I'm super excited
to see
that.
Me too. Yeah, me too. I've never done this process before. And I don't know if you know who Mike LaValle is, but he's like a knife maker in Louisiana. He's military. He's active military right now.
Makes awesome stuff.
Unbelievable work. Well, if you look at his handles are exactly what I just described. You know, lots of honeycomb mixed with different types of epoxies and then woods and all this stuff. So I kind of took a page out of his book and got inspired by the work that he's been doing to make a handle for the Revolution. Because I thought, you know what, if I'm going to do this, I might as well kind of go above and beyond, you know, and make something really cool and inspire people in the process, hopefully. So
Jake,
that's what I'm up to.
Jake Thompson, I think I mentioned him on the channel before or on the show before, but he has done several projects with that aluminum honeycomb, several resin projects. And so he's got some info if anybody out there is looking to play around with it.
His channel's awesome, by the way. I really like watching him.
He's a cool dude. He's just a down-to-earth good old boy, which is really cool. And the other, I don't know if you saw two other makers making handles for tools that they make. One is Andy Klein, who makes the twin turbo woodworking vise.
Right.
He just made a handle. And Adam Savage also on his
channel. I was going to say, Adam has his vise, right?
Mm-hmm.
In his shop. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then I think Adam made a handle that was based on some hardware that he purchased, and because, you know, he wanted it to fold in a specific way, which I thought was pretty clever. And then of course Andy Klein made another handle, just made it from scratch because that's how he rolls. But both really cool, and you wouldn't think. And Brian, I think your work probably is the same way, but at some level a handle is such a simple thing, but it can be incredibly complex, right? If it's not just right, you run into it all the freaking time, or it gets in the way of a process, or it's like one of a million things could happen with this silly handle.
And you make one thing wrong, and it's so sad when you get to the very end of a knife and you mess up the handle, and then I've had a few where I've thrown it against the wall. It's like, damn it all. I just finished this and the handle's no good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you're, especially with this type of prototyping, I'm really super happy that I have like the Langmuir Systems Crossfire Pro, because I, you know, right. I can just like tell it, like I can design it in CAD and in 5 minutes I can have one in my hand. And because the first few iterations of it, it just didn't feel right. It just didn't feel like it worked. You know, I would put it on and I'd be going, oh, you know, it's too low, or my mm-hmm. hand runs into the knob behind it. There's not enough room. You know, when I pull it, it doesn't really make you want to pull down. It makes you want to pull towards you. So it was like all of these little things that, you know, I think are overlooked in some other designs. They're just like, well, it's a handle. Just put a handle on
right.
it. It needs to be there. Just stick mm-hmm. it on there. And this project has come so far that I don't want to just do that. I don't want to just right. accept, you know, mediocrity. And then
well, next thing.
Also, I like that, we, you know, the user, whoever design or whoever puts it on there, has the ability to design whatever they want as far as the handle material, and they can kind of personalize their grinder.
Now, here's mm-hmm. my question. Can you sell a version that would be completely ready to go in case there is a person that buys it and doesn't want to, you know, modify it to their own?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I try to stay away from as much fabrication as possible just because it's so time consuming. But yeah, I mean, of course, we could do it like a knife handle where you could say, like, what color do you want? And they could pick a color and we could make it for them. You know,
Hand Tool Rescue gets into, or he's gotten in like deep into this whole philosophical, you know, debate. But he made a replica of sort of the old school screwdriver.
I saw that. Yeah.
And he got into this debate of, should he design a handle and you know, that would allow people to put whatever, the majority of the material was made out of wood, right? So the screwdriver itself is all metal, and it has a negative space where you would stick some wood in there to make a handle. Well, you know, he sold a large number of those screwdrivers without any wood in that negative space, without a quote handle, because of all the, you know, and I'm thinking, this is a damn screwdriver, dude. You know, like, as long as it's got a cylinder on the fucking end
of it. I like the minutia where he's going, though, because it makes sense that we have these conversations about the, okay, form over function. It's been the argument for so long. Which one is, you know, more important? Can you do both?
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
I think you can. And that's what we're getting back into, especially in the U.S., where we have given up our manufacturing to other countries because of cheap labor. And now we're seeing what that looks like. We're living in an IKEA world where, you know, things are not, they look cool, but they're not long lasting. They don't have the longevity. And I think that I love the renaissance that we're a part of. I mean, I know you guys probably feel the exact same way, is that
absolutely, man.
We're seeing these younger generations going, no, fuck that. I want something that's going to last 20 years. You know, I don't want to buy the cheapest
thing. And
it's
well thought out.
It's well thought out. It's handmade possibly. Yep. And, you know, my generation and your generation too, Ben, I don't know about you, but every single piece of furniture I had in my house up until probably about 5 years ago was particle board. It was falling apart within 10 years. Yeah. I mean, nothing lasted because that's all the option we had. Unless we made it ourselves, there was I couldn't afford to go commission a furniture maker, or I couldn't afford to go buy a solid piece of, you know, something. So that's what you bought, was the junk.
Yeah. I'm about to furnish an entire apartment off of pretty much that exact same stuff.
Yeah. You know, I'll also say, like, with regard to furniture, it's a really interesting landscape, because places like IKEA and others, there are a handful of others, but they make... Their quality is just high enough to be passable, you know, and I don't say that to be negative, because hell, I've still got a number of pieces in the house here that are IKEA, right? The bed I sleep on every night was made in Switzerland, you know? they're made out of real wood. It's not hardwood or anything like that, but it works, and it really is functional. Or it's also for some, income levels, it's also disposable after a short period of time. So it can kind of go both ways. Mm-hmm. I have, just with a little bit, I have one ad, not even an ad. I have one post in Facebook Marketplace that basically says, I'm a woodworker. I'll make you anything you want. I'll make your wife's Pinterest dreams come true. Just reach out to me.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And I've got a handful of pictures of tables that I've built over the years, in that post. Just from that post, it's unbelievable the requests I get for commission work, and that's mm-hmm. quite literally all the advertising I've done. Now, recently I have gone into Google My Business and I have gotten that authenticated and gotten that going. So I'm listed in Google now as an actual business. If you search woodworking in Boise, Idaho, that helps Very my cool. chances of coming up. But I think that people are now taking an interest in commissioning or finding somebody to make something, right? I've had even a few people say like, oh, I was looking at these cornhole boards on Etsy and, that this Etsy listing sure looks like it's some big corporation. And so I'd much rather you make them, even if they cost $20 more.
Wow. Those are nice people. Yeah. I also have a couple of posts, Facebook Marketplace posts, where I'm just kind of, hey, this is a variety of the knives I make. But the problem is Facebook keeps taking those things down because a sharp object, Yeah, I'm constantly trying to, change the wording, switch out a photo or two to get it up for a couple more weeks, because I also get quite a few people checking it out. But that also does turn into a lot of conversations of, okay, what do you want? Go through all of it and then, oh, wow, that's about three times more than I was expecting.
Yeah.
The argument for the website is to have the representation so you can just send people over there and they can look and see what your price point is. I think important for anybody. Yeah.
Speaking of Brian, I actually spent about 4 hours starting to put together a website on Squarespace the other day.
Hey, all right.
I'm not quite ready to go live, but it's getting pretty close.
Hey, if you're I meant to reach out to you after listening to the show as well, but with regard to taking credit card payment. Mm-hmm. So 3 or so years ago, I started using something called Wave Apps. So it's like a surf the wave. So surfing wave, like a wave, Wave Apps with an S, APPS. It is a free to use. So there's a paid version and there's a free version. I'm still using the free version because it more than suits my needs. It'll actually connect to your bank account and allow you to, for a simple operation like mine, where taxes are very simple to do, it's in and out. I've got a separate bank account just for Benjamin Butler Company, and mm-hmm. all my money for the company comes and goes through that. And so it connects to that card. And then at the end of the year, I've got all my ins and outs for taxes. And then also I create an estimate for every job that I bid and send. So it gives me a link. I send that link to the customer. They check out the estimate. If they accept the estimate, it gives them a link to pay via credit card directly through Wave Apps. They charge me like a 2% fee, which is pretty standard for everybody. And at times, depending on who it is, we might negotiate money exchange via check or cash or, PayPal or whatever. But it gives you that opportunity to have a link embedded right in there. It looks incredibly professional. You can customize the invoices and the estimates and everything else with your logo. And to me, it was just simple enough to lock in some deals that I might not get. If somebody's really kind of borderline, it's like, well, that is a shitload of money, but man, this guy's got a pretty serious operation going here. I trust
you. Yeah, man. I don't know about anyone who's listening, but I'm over here taking notes. I'm totally going to check that one out.
It's a good one. And yeah, you can even credit go so far as to, yeah, you can even go so far as to like have a point of sale through it. Like if you were working a, it'll integrate with Square, I think, and different stuff like that. So just another option that's out there to check out. And honestly, you get quite a bit for the, at the free level. But yeah, it is the credit card thing is a complete game changer because I my commissions tend to be, anywhere from a grand to $2,000 because they're big pieces of furniture, mm-hmm. Depending. And so I always take 50% up front because if tomorrow, and most of my bids are obviously, I look at materials and then a multiplier is how I calculate my bids for furniture. Yeah. So
I've also started taking 50% up front. Specifically this, about a month ago, I finished a knife for a customer that I didn't ask for 50% up front, and I still have her knife. She literally lives within, 20 miles of me and just won't make the time to, connect to make that money exchange.
And you can't, with a custom something, with a custom piece of furniture, if I build somebody a dining table and they bail on me, my shop's tiny. The second that thing's done, it's got to get out. And in fact, in my term sheet, I have laid out where your piece of furniture can stay in my shop for 3 days after I tell you it's done. And then I'm going to start charging you $300 a day for rent. Because
that's a good metric because people will legit stonewall you and not pay you. I do this in my own business where we tell people you have 30 days to pick up your equipment. Otherwise it's ours. We own it.
Yeah.
We have had numerous times where people come back 60, 90 days.
Yep.
And I just hold up the piece of paper that they signed on their way out when they left all their computer equipment with me. And I said, this is what you assigned to. You agreed to this. If you'd like, you can buy your equipment back, but you cannot, that's as simple as that. And, of course, if it's a long-term customer, somebody I've worked with in a long, I'll usually give them a little leeway, but we've had people, I am not kidding you. Some guy left his computer. It was a nice machine with us for a year. We had
it. I can believe it.
And
honestly, it's crazy.
And I went, I was like, finally, it came down to it where I was like, we got to just, we got to call the guy. And we were calling the email and no response. So we just sold his equipment. Like we sold it, because it was ours at whatever point. And I'm not kidding you, right after we sold it, he came in looking for it.
Of course. Yeah.
And I was like, dude, here's the record of all the times we tried to get a hold of you. And he's like, I'm going to leave you a negative review on Google. And I was like, well, I'm just going to respond to it. And, you're going to look kind of stupid, but okay.
Yeah.
And, it happens in every business. You got to get 50% up front. Make sure your costs are covered up front. And then that second half is your profit. And then,
if you make them pay 50% up front, they already have money out of their pocket. So they're eager to, give that less to get that, get that product. So I totally get it.
Yeah. And it shuts my shop down, and I look at the same. You can have that stuff
sitting in there. Yeah.
Yeah. I look at it the same, like a river table. I've got one of those coming up for a desktop, pouring epoxy an inch and a half thick in between two slabs takes me three pours and a minimum of 24 to 48 hours cure time. That shuts my shop down for a week. Just literally pouring epoxy in a damn crack, So that cost, that potential earning, has to be made up for somewhere. And so, those rates go into things like river tables or something that has a very specific finish that has, 12 layers of shellac. Well, that shit's got to dry, and I don't have a dry room.
So here's my question to you guys. So, it's been literally a month since I've been trying to contact her. At what point should I just turn around and do an auction or do a, I don't know.
Did she pay a deposit at all?
No, it was just a local person that I thought, you know, I went and met and we designed in person. I thought it was going to be good. And I was like, oh, you know, most people, you know, I make pay a certain percent up front, but you know, you guys seem like good people. And then
Here's how I'd handle it. I would send them an email and a voicemail, and both of which it would state, hey, look, you have 7 days. You have 7 days from today.
Yeah.
Today's date is this. And if you don't contact me back and come and pick this thing up within 7 days, then I'm going to sell it to someone else. I have someone else interested in it, and I need to get out from underneath this project. Thank you. Yeah. Goodbye. Click. And in 7 days, they don't. There's no obligation. I mean, you know,
right.
That absolves you. All right. Real quick. Want to switch gears yet again. We are 1 hour into the show. Which means it is dad joke time. I am doing a new segment every single week. I bring out a new eye roller of a joke. And here, are you guys ready?
Absolutely, I'm ready.
So if two vegans get into an argument, is it still considered a beef?
Oh, goodness.
There you go. I don't think it is.
I actually have one as well.
Oh, all right. Let's hear it.
Yes. I couldn't find the damn mute button. That was a good one.
I was wondering where the hell you were. I was like, where's my support, like, man? I guess you didn't find that funny. Thanks a fucking
buried
lot.
Buried under six windows. I'm like, shit, that was good. I like that. Vegan.
All right, Brian's got a dad joke.
So about a week ago, I had a math question. The only person I could think to ask was this German guy. So I went to him and asked him, you know, hey, what's the square root of 81? And he told me no.
Nine.
Oh, that's funny. I like it. Nine. Oh. He told me no. That's good. I like that. That's very funny. Very funny. It hits all of the the dad joke thing about having somebody just like think about it for a second. There was a couple of jokes that I posted recently on Facebook. One of which is I just recently sold my vacuum because all it does is sit around and collects dust.
Right.
Some people thought that I was like making serious, like a joke, like maybe Sarah doesn't vacuum the house enough or aww, like dude, it's a dad joke, yo. I don't have to. Do I need to put a hashtag dad joke? Come on, man.
Oh, man.
The other day at 8 o'clock and it was very time consuming.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
I thought the dryer was shrinking my clothes, but it turns out it was the refrigerator all along.
Yeah, exactly. My dad had a very sort of halfway inappropriate joke. And I was like, so I called, he didn't finish the joke. He posted a comment. Oh. And then he didn't tell the answer. And then I called him on Father's Day, I said, are you going to tell me the punchline of the joke? I said, I'm afraid to ask you. So, all right. So I'll just tell you what the joke is. Why are Dolly Parton's feet so small? Because nothing grows well in the shade. All right. Nice. So that joke could have gone like in two or three different ways. And I was just like, I'm not even going to ask, you know, I thought that was pretty funny, you know, but it's not a dad joke. You know, you don't say that to your kid.
Yeah. Like a dad joke is like, hardly working, you know?
I got my hair cut. Well, I hope you got them all cut.
Oh, you just got one. You didn't get them all.
I know. Right. You can't do boob jokes with your kids.
No. Like,
I mean, of course I'm his kid, but I'm an adult. You know? Anyways. All right. Listen. All right. Switching gears yet again.
Mm-hmm.
We have been working hard here at the Work For It podcast to bring entertainment and education and, you know, some decent, halfway decent eye roller jokes. And if you are interested in participating or supporting the Work For It podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/workforit, and you can support our mission here, which is tomfoolery and dumbassery for as little as $1 a month. So if you feel like you got something out of our show, make sure you go over to patreon.com/workforit and you can support what we do. You can also leave us a review on Apple and a couple of other podcast platforms. I really don't know which, but that would also very much help. And we would love it if you hashtagged WFI project, no S at the end. And that way we can start following each other's projects. And if you do that, like you heard on today's show, we actually will call you out, talk about your project, and hopefully get you more followers on your social media, which then in turn will translate into sales for you and hopefully move your goal of becoming a maker or whatever you're doing with your life. It'll just project you up into the stratosphere, as they say. So anyway, real quick, guys, I have a hard out in about 10 minutes, and okay. I said what I was up to in my shop. So I real quick wanted to hear, Ben, I think you kind of touched on your river table. So Brian, yes, what are you doing? What do you got going on this week?
Yeah, I have a batch going right now, a batch of 7 knives.
What are you growing?
Three of them are for myself. I'm making myself a
pickle cutter.
What?
I said you and pickle cutter been talking or what?
I have a batch of knives being made. but anyway, so I'm making myself a chef knife, an offset serrated bread knife, and a paring knife for the kitchen that I'm moving, you know, into the apartment. And then I'm also working on two sets of my personal everyday carry knives. So one of them is a nano neck knife. It's just a little, about the size of your thumb, little guy. And then your belt knife, which is about a 3-inch. It's a variation on the very first knife I ever made for myself. But so I've got a couple of customers that are buying those as sets, so I'm actually making those right now. So it's been pretty productive. Today I was grinding away, putting in some bevel, so it's been pretty good here.
I see that you're using the Alabama Damascus. So by the way, if you want to check out what Brian's doing, you can go to his Instagram, b.coneknives, and that's K-O-H-N knives. And or you can look at the hashtag WFI project, and you'll see his progress right there. He's tagging everything he's doing. So I've got two questions about these knives. One is, do you know the handle material? Like, is it going to be synthetic? Is it going to be wood? What do you got going on there?
So one set is going to be it's kind of funny because one is like a high end set, and one of them's kind of like the cheaper end set. So I've got one that's the Alabama Damascus with carbon fiber handles. So it's like kind of like the premium side. And then the other side, I'm making a set that is W2 steel with a hardwood handle. So it's kind of
Damascus. Okay, so these are not all Damascus, because I see what you're saying now. I see like two or three of them are Damascus. The other ones are you said O1 or W1?
W2.
W2. And okay, mono steels. I got it. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Are you considering, so will this be like a custom set, or are you considering this to be maybe like, you know, something that you would offer as a standard?
Oh no,
you know,
so
higher end or
so I have kind of a bunch of different, you know, styles of knives. Like the nano neck knife is pretty standard, the belt knife that I make, the 5-inch chopper. People will look and see those ones, and then I'm glad to make little modifications if people want, you know, a different style handle, or, you know, make little, you know, basically tailor the knife to the customer. So I have standard, you know, shapes and whatever, but, you know, pretty much if a customer wants a different shape, I'm totally down.
The other question I had for you is your touch mark.
Yes.
How are you achieving that? Are you basically have like a piece of steel that you have your name in on, that's etched on there, and then you hit it with a hammer. Is that what you do?
Yeah, I actually do that. So I do my normalizing cycles. Just before I do my normalizing cycle, I heat it up red hot, and I, you know, hot forge stamp it in. And then after it's that, I do so my normalizing cool. cycles and then heat treat. Yeah.
I got to tell you, that's an art in and of itself. I had a really difficult time with my, which is why I now own a $5,000 laser etcher, because I could not, get it to look right. Yours are obviously.
I mess them up all the time.
Right. But you can read them and see what people don't understand is you get one shot and that's it. You don't get more than one.
They're not like lining it back up and hitting it again, right? It's, I got a branding iron. The branding iron is the same way. You get like a shadow with a branding iron a lot, where, and then depending on the species of wood, it can, some need to be a little hotter, some cooler. It's a mother trucker.
When I was first doing those touch marks, I tried to line it up and do a second one, and it you totally just get a double stamp and it looks like crap. So you get one shot and that's it.
One shot and that's it. Now, here's what I did towards the end. I figured it out, and it's an elaborate system, but I use people are going to get a little upset with the way I'm using this tool because I'm doing it the wrong way. But do you know what an arbor press is?
Yes. I was just going to interrupt you and say arbor press. I've seen that happen a couple times.
Yeah. So I I drilled and tapped a hole in the quill. Yeah. And then so my stamp would like basically go up in, and then I could seat it, you know, with this screw. And then I would heat up my steel red hot. I would bring the arbor press quill down, and then I would use a huge hammer and slam the quill down. And
so how many arbor presses did you go through?
Well, these are the cheap ones. Like I got this. This is the reason why I took this risk. So this is a 1-ton arbor press. So it's small, believe it or not. The 1-ton is not very big. And I got it kind of for free from Grizzly. So I was like, well, I'm going to just fuck this thing all up because it was free. Sure. So I'm going to just, you know, see what I can do with it. But honestly, like I press bearings with it still and everything. But yeah, it's nice. It kind of looks like Sloth from Goonies now because it's like it's been dropped on its head a few times, if you know what I mean. So,
yeah, I mean, I kind of like the way that I do it now because if you get a little bit of a variation, you know, it's a handmade product. You're going to get those little.
Totally agree, dude. I agree. Yeah. It looks cool. I love it because I have like some old cleavers, and those old cleavers, that's how they did their touch marks. And I just think it's fascinating, even though it's not perfect, it still looks good. I think it looks cool and looks handmade. So anyway, gentlemen, I am going to end the show right here. I want you to know, I appreciate you. I know you're out there working for it every single week, every single day. You are in the trenches, in your workshops, and you're doing the hard but very rewarding work that is being a maker. We appreciate everybody listening to you, the Work For It podcast. Don't forget to check out our Instagram page, workforit.podcast. You can find Ben Butler at Benjamin Butler Company. Actually, it's Benjamin Butler Co. on Instagram. Company. And is it company? It's full.
It should
full
be
word.
Co, but yeah.
Yeah, company. Long. And then you got Brian Cone Knives at B.Cone Knives. And remember, Cone is spelled K-O-H-N Knives. And gentlemen, I appreciate you guys so very much. I really do. And it's always awesome hanging out with you every week, man. So
it's a blast
every time.
Guys,
have a great week. Yeah, man.
You too, man.
You too.
All right, guys. Well, listen, we'll catch up with you next week, okay?
See you guys.
Work for it.
See you guys.
Team
Goodbye.
Work for it. Team WFI coming right at you.
Goodbye.
WCCC. All right. Avios. Adios.
Later.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.